Good morning. It's time for the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
Good morning. This is Debbie Verney.
And I'm Kim Hance.
And we're going to be here for the next hour to answer your questions on estate planning, estate administration, and Medicaid planning. You could be our first caller at 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. Good morning, Kim.
Good morning. And we forgot to mention we're with the Herzog Law Firm, aren't we?
Oh, you know, hey, it's early. I've only had two cups of coffee.
Yeah, so good. Let's rain is back again. Surprise, surprise. Good morning, Ben.
Good morning.
So we were talking yesterday. Kim and I were in the Saratoga office yesterday. And we were talking about, it's been very interesting, the cases that have come across our desks. And I was telling her that it seems like we have more and more people that are dying without wills. And it's very surprising in this day and age that people don't do wills, but of course, 59% of people in the United States have not done wills. So, you know, it's one of those things. But it really makes a mess for the family. I have an estate right now where the sister passed away, and all she really owns is a house in Albany. But she has a surviving brother, a surviving sister, and then a predeceased brother. So now the people that are going to take, because there was no will, right, are the brother, the sister, and the children of the predeceased brother who we have to hunt down. So it's just kind of crazy. And the brother's like, no. She wanted the money, you know, she wanted the house to go to my sister. And I am like, well, it doesn't matter. This is the rules of intestacy. This is what New York does. And people don't understand that if you don't have a will, New York State has rules that you have to follow. And this is who gets what. So it's kind of crazy because people think, well, no, they told me I was going to get that. They told me I got the house. Well, unless they have a will, unless it's in writing, guess what? That's not the way it goes.
Yeah. And, you know, we've also been talking about just, you know, when you're actually doing your documents and the folks that you're naming to take care of things for you, you know, you want to make sure those people are going to have the best interest of you at heart, you know, that they are truly going to make the best decisions for you because, you know, again, we're working with a family, and, you know, to put it mildly, it's going south fast, because, you know, there's so many, components that are dynamics that are coming into play. And, you know, the person that we know, that we know to have been taking care of the individual, she has no say in any of it.
No.
You know, all the decisions are being made by, you know, estranged children and stepchildren and, you know, that really don't know the individual. And it was her husband that just recently passed away that, you know, tried to make his wishes known, but of course, because his wife is incapacitated at this point due to her dementia, there were some documents that couldn't be changed. So unfortunately, it's going the worst way possible, almost. And it's so disheartening because, you know, every day we try to work with people to really make it so that they can have their dying wish, if you will, and that things go the way that they really want them to. But, you know, to your point, if you don't do your documents properly, as by examples this week, things just don't go well sometimes.
Well, and you need to look at them. You can't just set it and forget it, right? So whenever you do your documents, we always say to our clients, you really should look at your documents every 5 years. If something happens, then you should look at them more often than 5 years. But looking back, I mean, in this kind of situation, right, this person who's now incapacitated, they probably should have looked at her documents at the point in time that maybe she was diagnosed and said, okay, are these the people that you're still going to be wanting to act for you down the road? Have they been involved in your life? Are they around? And a lot of times, whenever we did our client, webinar this week, I talked about the new power of attorney. And a lot of people have done their powers of attorney like 20 years ago, right? So 20 years ago, husband names wife, wife names husband. They name the kids as backup, or if their kids were minors, maybe they name their brother, their sister. So you start looking at those documents, and maybe your spouse now has been diagnosed with some sort of cognitive impairment, and maybe your brothers and sisters are already gone, or maybe you want to move the kids up, or maybe you want to make it so that it's your spouse or your child, so that if something happens and you became incapacitated. So these are all things you really need to think about. And the thing is, too, we've had some people that actually did have wills that you go through them, and the people that they left stuff to are already gone, right? So again, New York's going to control where that stuff goes if you're leaving your money to people that have already passed away.
Right. Right. Or it ends up going to their extended, you know, in the one case that you're dealing with, you know, children that might still be alive, or, you know, the family tree is pretty extensive when we're having to look for folks.
Yeah, I have a situation now where the husband passed away. The wife has been living in memory care for a long time, and she just passed away. And I know that I lectured these people over and over again, because that's what I do, about making sure that their beneficiaries were updated. And the daughter calls me and says, oh, I found this policy on my mom, and her parents, who have been gone for a long, long time, are still the beneficiary. And, you know, and the company's saying, well, there's nothing we can do. I'm like, yeah, you can. If the person's gone, then it's going to go to your mom's estate. So we may have to probate mom's estate, but let's just see how much money's there before we have to do it. So it's just crazy. If you set up a trust and then you don't move your stuff into the trust, hint, hint, it's not going to do you any good, huh, Kim?
This is true. And Debbie's hinting because, you know, case in point, you know, people sometimes do the work that needs to be done, but then they don't ever follow through on either deeding property to the trust or actually signing documents that are very vital to the planning process, like a power of attorney. So it's not only important to meet, you know, set up everything, but then to follow through, because that's another thing that happens a lot of times, that we see that families are, oh yeah, my mom has a trust, or oh yeah, but guess what? They never deeded the property to the trust, or they never transferred the assets into the trust. And you have to follow through on all of the steps that are necessary to make sure that those plans are set, you know?
Yeah, we'd love to get some callers, guys. Let's get some callers at 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. You could be our very first caller, and Kim and I would love to talk to you. So give us a call at 518-476-5900. Kim and I could just talk all day, right, Kim? Or at least for an hour.
So lots of exciting things are happening, you know, for those who don't know. Herzog is celebrating its 75th anniversary this year. That's a pretty major milestone. There are not a lot of, doing some research, and there are really not a lot of local companies that have, you know, been in existence for that long. So that's a pretty impressive milestone, I think, you know, 75 years as a law firm.
And we're doing a lot of stuff to celebrate.
We are. As some people may know, we are big advocates and supporters of the Alzheimer's Association. So we have lots of walks coming up in September and October. We're also sponsoring, so far, 3 blood drives. One will be August 25th, and that one is going to be at Corporate Woods, not at our office, but at one of the vacant offices, 16 Corporate Woods. Cody, who is our landlord, has generously donated the space for that day. They will be 9 to 2, I think, are the times that it's going to run. We have one the following day, Thursday, the 26th, in Kingston. That one will be at the Best Western Kingston, and that's usually where we hold some of our in-person seminars, which I heard a rumor, Debbie, that we might be going back to that.
Hey, you know, it's a confirmed rumor. Our goal is to be able to do live seminars in September. I mean, that's the thing we're pushing for right now. We're trying to get everything in place, and hopefully everything stays the same as far as COVID goes. You know, we can only do what we can do as far as having people in person, but that's our goal. But in August, we actually have our webinars again. We have our Wednesday webinars, and then we have a week of webinars. But, yeah, that's the goal. September is the goal, to try to get out in the public and get some live seminars going, because I miss it. I really miss seeing the people answering the questions live as opposed to on a video. It's just a great opportunity.
Yeah. We are starting to do some in-person presentations at different types of senior, living. We have Colony Seniors coming up this week. We're going to be doing basics of estate planning, I think, at their congregate lunch on Friday. Dave is going to be doing that. And then in August, Jane Marie is going to be offering legal and financial planning for Alzheimer's disease. So we talked specifically about some of the things that you need to think about if you or a loved one has Alzheimer's and dementia, and some of the things you should consider when you're doing your advanced directive planning and, you know, your estate planning. And she was at the summit in Glenwick, I believe, the one over in Glenville, a few weeks ago. And you're going to be doing a breakfast at the Saratoga Senior Center upcoming, I believe. So I'm definitely starting to get out, which is nice. It's nice to see our folks again.
It's very nice to see them. I also did a couple of them in Malta for the Malta seniors, which was great. We did those in person. So it's just good to get out and see people. I know Ben was saying that he was at the track at opening day, and you got to see a lot of people there, huh, Ben?
I didn't see a lot of masks, I can tell you that. Saw a lot of people, but didn't see a lot of masks. So must have been everybody was vaccinated.
Must be.
That is the hope.
Uh-huh.
But we are here in New York is approaching the, 67% now fully vaccinated. I know that, we're getting there. I heard also that some of the mass vaccination sites are starting to close down, and they're going to start focusing on some of the communities that where the vaccination numbers are a little bit lower. To try to help boost those numbers. And then we'll be going into fall and deciding whether or not we need boosters, right? Because we haven't really heard a whole lot. And of course, there's a couple of new variants that are out there. And so I'm hoping that we're able to continue to stay healthy and stay open. A thing to mention too is, if any of our listeners out there belong to a group of some sort and you would like to have us come offer a program or talk to you about some of our topics, we are happy to do that. We do it at no charge, and it's a great way to get information. Another way to get great information is to call in, right?
Definitely. Give us a call at 518-476-5900. I mean, this is wild. Usually, we're like loaded with callers. I think people are like sitting there looking out the rain going, seriously? Another rainy day? I'm just going to go back to bed. So give us a call, 518-476-5900. We were talking earlier about our webinars. We didn't do any in July, except for our client webinar, which was last week, and that went over very well. But August 4th, we have Aging in Place and Wills versus Trust. One is at 10 a.m. and one is at 2. August 11th, What to Do When a Loved One Dies at 10 a.m. and How Not to Pay for Care Services at 2 p.m. And then Webinar Week, August 16th, Wills versus Trust. Tuesday, August 17th, How to Plan Your Estate. Wednesday, August 18th, Aging in Place. Thursday, August 19th, Advanced Directives, What They Are and Why You Need Them. And then our newest one on Wednesday, August 25th, Estate Planning for Young Families. People, you know, when you're young, you're invincible, right? Nothing's ever going to happen to you. Nothing's ever going to happen to your family. So this is one of those things where you really need to start thinking about these things. And then 2 in the afternoon, Top 10 Reasons to Plan Your Estate.
Debbie, Kim.
Yes.
We have our first caller this morning. It's Fred and Troy.
Good morning, Fred.
Good morning. We have my mother's property in a trust, and it's one where she has control of everything, pays all the bills, et cetera. And so I don't know if it's a revocable or irrevocable. But she has a pour-over will.
Okay.
And this was done. And but she has no, we have no, like, bank account or checking account or anything associated with the trust. She pays everything out of her regular thing. So, I mean, come the time when she passes, where will her, like, her cash or, you know, her other bank accounts, they're supposed to roll over into the trust, correct?
Well, it depends. So, sounds like she has a pour-over will and a trust. It could be revocable. It could be irrevocable. Probably irrevocable. If everything is joint or has a beneficiary or it's in the trust, it's just going to pass as a matter of law. So if her checking account has someone joint on it, it's going to go to that joint person. Or if she has beneficiaries, it's going to go to those people. And same thing with, like, IRAs, 401ks, life insurance, she has beneficiaries. So let's just say the only asset that she has is the house that's in the trust. So the trustee would call the realtor and put the house on the market, and then when the house is sold, they're going to make a check payable to the trust, because the trust is the one that owns it, and then whoever the trustee would be would open up an account in the name of the trust, deposit the check, and then as soon as the check clears, they could write the checks to whomever the beneficiaries are.
Okay, so the opening of the account could happen later. It doesn't happen to happen now.
No, you can do it later. Yeah. And sometimes, depending on the situation at the closing, if you have, I've seen it where you have three beneficiaries that are beneficiaries of the trust, and they just sometimes at the closing just write the checks directly to the three beneficiaries, right? So the house sells for $300,000 and change. At the closing, everybody gets a $100,000 check. So it just depends on what the situation is at the closing. But a lot of times they'll make it payable to the trust, and then the trustee just deposits it and then just writes checks to everyone. But the goal, even though you have a pour-over will there that says, hey, if there's anything I forgot, pour it into the trust, the goal when you're doing a trust is to make sure that you don't have to probate the will, because that just kind of muddies the waters. So we want to make sure that everything's either in the trust, has a beneficiary, or it's joint, so that everything's fairly seamless when the person passes away.
Yeah, everything does have either a joint account or they do have beneficiaries. So
you
yeah, we've done
all
that.
Then. That's
okay.
Good.
Very good. Yeah, we did this with Shalom years ago. So.
Oh, yeah.
Down there. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, people listened to Shalom and did what he told them to do, so that's great.
Okay. All righty. Well, thank you very much.
Well, thank you for calling. We really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Bye now.
Bye-bye. So if you want to be our second caller, the phone number is 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. You know, a lot of people don't think that you can actually sell a house that's in a trust. And just because a house is in a trust doesn't mean you can't sell it. There are a lot of people that, you know, they just want to sell it. They want to move into senior living I'm all about senior living. I've been to a lot of these places that I'm thinking, I could live here totally. Could definitely, you know, they have their own pool, they have their own hairdresser, they have their own movie theater. Kim knows what I'm talking about.
Absolutely.
Debbie, Kim, we have another caller. We have Barbara in Clifton Park.
Good morning, Barbara.
Good morning. I have two questions. I have a revocable trust with you, and one of my questions is about ITFs, I want to know if an account that I set up with a bank is still needs, it's myself first, and I set it up, it's anymore, it doesn't seem to matter who sets anything up. And for my two children. Now, it's like a money market that they used to call it. And it's a savings type of account. Now, my question is, would I be able to act on that account myself, since I set it up, or do I have to have, in most cases, the other two people's signature?
So it's an ITF account and trust for account?
Yes.
Okay, so whenever you do an ITF account, or the same thing as a POD account, payable on death, or a TOD account, transfer on death, that's still your account. Those people have no vested interest in that account until you pass away. And then they would take the death certificate into the bank, and then the bank would write them a check. So you can do whatever you want to with that account. You can open, close, move it, do whatever you want to. The people that are the beneficiaries have absolutely no say in it, which a lot of people do that as opposed to making people joint, because if you make somebody joint on an account, then they have just as much access as you do.
Okay. No, I didn't. Okay. That answers that question. The other question that I had was who is Herzog, or who is responsible for closing an estate? Do you have to have another lawyer outside of your practice, or I just don't know?
You mean if you passed away, what would happen?
Yes.
Okay, so what happens is whenever someone passes away, when the family contacts our office, we set up a time for them to kind of come in, and we go over things. You know, if it's, let's just say you have the trust, right, and you have the ITF accounts, we would say, okay, the ITF accounts, you guys can take the original death certificate to the bank and collect those. If you have a trust account, then we say, okay, what's in the trust? The trust terminates when mom dies. And so we want to make distributions. If there's a house in there, you need to call the realtor, get it on the market, or transfer it to whomever. A lot of times, if it's everything's in the trust or has beneficiaries, they don't need us until it comes to the real estate closing, and then we'll do the real estate closing for them. I mean, that's kind of our goal, to make sure that your estate plan is as bulletproof as possible so that your family doesn't have to need us. You know, they can come in and we can give them direction, but then a lot of times I have people that are like, nope, here's all the paperwork, you take care of everything. So it's strictly up to the people as to what they want to do.
So, in other words, they're in different parts of the country, not out of the country, but in the country. It's difficult sometimes to get them both together.
Mm-hmm.
So one, since they are co-trustee, they can act separately or together. Is that right?
Well, if your trust says that they can act separately or together, they can. And it's really not difficult for us to deal with people that are out of state, even out of country, because with, you know, conference calls and emails and Zoom and stuff like that, it's fairly easy for us to communicate with people, and we can always Federal Express documents out to people if they need to sign them, or email them to them and have them send us back You know, they can print them and send them back. So it's really easy. I mean, we don't have families that really live around each other anymore. We deal with people all over the state. I'm dealing with right now with one that her family's in Belgium. So, you know, it happens, and we're set up to deal with that kind of stuff.
Okay. Well, thank you. And I'm looking forward to the real seminar.
Oh, me too.
In person, if you set that up.
We'll keep everybody updated.
I'm not good on webinar, is what I'm saying. So
I've gotten better. Still not perfect, but I've gotten better.
Okay. Well, I have a real paper that I got from your office, so that'll help.
Well, that's good.
Thank you.
So you have a great weekend, and thank you very much for calling.
Okay. You too. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye. Wow, that was great. Two calls in a row.
And it's good when folks call and ask questions like that, but even more important, like we always say to, you know, folks, it's really great to come in every few years and sit down and review everything in person, too. And we're doing a lot of that now, just because sometimes things get missed or, you know, through sitting down around a table, it opens the conversation up and we can pull the documents out and really look at what's there and talk about things that might have changed or need to change, because there's a new power of attorney out, too, which... you know, that's something else that that folks need to think about and consider when they're reviewing their documents.
Yeah, it's interesting, the new power of attorney. We could probably talk about the new power of attorney after the break, right, Ben?
We are about a minute before break. I can go there now if you'd like, and we can come back and talk about that more. If you want to do that, we're fine.
Hey, sounds like a plan.
All right, we'll take our break right here. We'll be right back with the second half of the Herzog Law Firm's Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour coming up right after this.
You've been listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Join us every week to learn more about protecting the assets you've worked hard for.
Options available for Medicaid planning and more.
With offices located in Corporate Woods in Albany.
West Harrison Street in Saratoga Springs.
Executive Woods in Clifton Park.
And Flatbush Road in Kingston.
Our attorneys are here to help you.
If you'd like to schedule an appointment to speak with David,
Jane Marie Harry, or Debbie,
please call us during normal business hours, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m.
To contact us at our Albany office, call 518-465-7581.
Our Saratoga Springs office at 518-581-8131.
Our Clifton Park office at 518-952-4010.
And our Kingston office at 845-338-6405.
Let the Herzog Law Firm help you navigate a plan that works for you and your family. Now back to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
And we're back for the second half hour. I'm Debbie Verney.
And I'm Kim Hance.
And Kim is our geriatric care manager, and I'm one of the attorneys with the Herzog Law Firm. We're going to be here for the next half hour to answer your questions on estate planning, estate administration, Medicaid planning, and you could be our first caller in the second half at 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. Before we went to the break, we were talking about the new power of attorney, and there were some major changes. Our form, it was supposed to make it shorter. It did. It shortened ours up by about 3 pages. I think, Kim, yesterday was the first time you were a witness to the new power of attorney, right?
It was.
So it's got a few changes. The major thing about the new power of attorney is that when they drafted this power of attorney, they wanted to make sure that there weren't going to be any issues with banks and financial institutions taking the new power of attorney. So what they've done with the new power of attorney, they've kind of like made sure that the banking organizations know that they really need to take this, and they put in language that only gives them a certain amount of time to respond. You know, if you go in and say, I need to use this, and they say, oh, we have to run it by our legal department. And then, I mean, you can, if you have to try to enforce it, if they say no and it's valid, then you could get damages and attorney fees. So they've really given the power of attorney a lot more teeth now if it's done correctly. And also what they've done is they've grandfathered the old powers of attorney in if they were done correctly. So if you've got a power of attorney that you downloaded off a website and did yourself, which I've had people that have brought those in, and it's not valid, even though this new power of attorney has all these teeth and they've grandfathered all the old ones in, if it wasn't done correctly, they still don't have to take it.
Debbie, Kim, we have another caller. We have Gina in Albany.
Good morning, Gina.
Morning. My question is two different questions. Excuse me. I have a house I'm trying to sell, and I'm being given a runaround on this one. One real estate person said, you don't have to take everything in the house. You can take half of it and leave the other half here, and whoever buys it can clear it up for you. I said, that sounds good. Another real estate person told me everything has to be out of the house. So I don't know. They're confused. It's being confused. I might have to get another real estate person. And, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, generally in a real estate contract, it says that the house has to be broom clean, okay? Mm-hmm. What that means is everything needs to be out of the house, all the way down to paint cans. And a lot of people are like, oh, but I want to leave them the touch-up paint. No, everything has to be out of the house. Sometimes you can negotiate with people because some people, they want your furniture or they want this or that. But the general rule when you sell a house, it has to be broom clean. The yard has to be mowed or the snow has to be shoveled. The people want it kind of in move-in condition. And so the first realtor that told you you could leave the stuff is not correct unless you negotiate with the buyers that you're going to leave the stuff.
Right. Now, my other question is my checking account from my bank. And I know who I want on the account, but unfortunately, she's a cousin of mine. She lives 90 miles away from me. And I asked the bank, I says, can I proxy? They says, sorry, we can't do that. So I don't know what to do. I got to get a hold of her somehow, some way. It's not easy either, but I know who I want, but no, there's no proxy.
Well, so they're saying that they can't add her unless she's there in person, right?
Right.
So what you could...
signature.
Right, they have to have her signature. So what you could do is you could do a power of attorney, right? And that says that she has access to it. Basically, a power of attorney would allow the person to do whatever with your account. You could do a power of attorney. You could appoint her. The power of attorney could be mailed out to her where she would sign it and notarize it. Then you could put that power of attorney on file with the bank, and she would be able to have access to the account. But what you need to understand is she'd only have access while you're alive, right? If you passed away, a power of attorney is not any good anymore. So what I would do is I would execute a power of attorney, and then I would make her a beneficiary on the account, if that's where you want the money to go, so that she'd have control over it while you're alive. And then when you pass away, she could go in with your death certificate and collect it.
Well, how many forms would I need for this power of attorney?
Well, what I would suggest, it's one form. It's basically a form where you say that you appoint a person to be able to, you know, have access to your accounts and everything like that. You could contact our office on Monday if you want to. You could come in and we could talk about a power of attorney and exactly what you need to do. And then we would prepare it for you. You would sign it, not all in the same day, by the way. And then, again, mail it out to her for signature. And then you would just take copy to the bank so that they had it.
Oh, but after I die, you said it would be no good.
Right. The power of attorney is no good after you pass away. So if you want to make sure that money goes to her, you need to go to the bank and you need to tell them that you want to make her the beneficiary of the account, that you want the account to be transfer on death, TOD, to her, and they'll put the information on the signature card. They don't need her there for that. And then when you pass away, she could just go in with the death certificate and collect it.
Oh, I see. Okay, then. All right, thank you.
You're welcome. Have a great weekend.
You too.
So, Kim, when you're dealing with our folks, our elderly folks, when they're trying to get their documents together and you're trying to find care in them for everything, what kind of roadblocks do you generally see?
Yeah, so, I mean, and I was going to say on her question as far as moving and things like that, you know, one of the things that we can offer, particularly with me being a geriatric care manager, is, you know, access to resources out there that will help with those things. You know, we work with several organizations like Organize Senior Moves that will go in and do everything from start to finish. They'll pack up everything. They'll divide everything up according to whether it needs to be, it could be donated or maybe an estate sale, or maybe there are things that you would like for family members to have, so they'll make sure it gets doled out that way. Things that you want to take with you, they'll pack up. They'll actually take it to wherever it is the next place you're going. So when we were talking about senior living communities, they'll take it into the senior living community, unpack it, and do everything. Set it all up, put your dishes away in the cabinets, hang your pictures. You know, they make it move-in ready for you. And so what's really nice is they'll take care of the old home. They'll fix up the new place where you're going, and really makes it a, sort of a stress-free, you know, move for seniors. Because a lot of times folks that we work with, they've been in their home for, you know, 40, 50, 60 years. And so, I mean, I know how much I've accumulated in our home in 20 years. So I can only imagine, you know, double that, what it would take to sort of make a move. And, you know, it's emotional, but it's also physically challenging for folks as they get older to be able to do those kinds of things. So that's something that we help with. I mean, so I think some of the other challenges, and one of the things that I really encourage people to think about, if downsizing is something that you're considering, you want to make the decision to do it sooner rather than later, because your options become less and less as your needs become more and more, right? So a lot of times we're dealing with folks in crisis because somebody has had a stroke, or, you know, perhaps a chronic condition has progressed enough that that person is no longer physically capable to do things. So that really narrows the choices of senior living that's available. Because to qualify for an independent living, you need to be independent. You know, you need to be, you know, sort of reliant on yourself to walk and, you know, be able to keep a schedule, things like that. But the nice thing about qualifying for independent living and moving in is then you can bring the care with you as your needs increase. So a lot of independents offer that aging in place model where you can bring in, you know, up to 24 hours of care a day. You can have hospice. It provides all of those things. But you need to move in soon enough to be afforded that opportunity. Otherwise, we'll be looking at places like assisted livings, or, you know, unfortunately, there are times where there's no other option than a nursing home. And we certainly want to be able to afford folks options if that's something that they're considering.
And there's always options.
There are, you know, sometimes we meet challenges, right? Particularly when people can't agree. But yes, and that's what I always tell folks is that usually we can always have at least, you know, two plans, of, you know, options and opportunities. And, you know, obviously the sooner you make the decision to act, the more opportunities and choices there are. So working with a family right now, and they're like, we had no idea that all of this was available. You know, they're looking to downsize and move out of their big home, and they wanted a two-bedroom apartment of having family to be able to visit and things like that. And So they're working with you know, one of our colleagues that helps with placement and they're blown away by all of the options that are out there and different types of services that are offered, whether it's transportation or meals. You know, a lot of these independent living places have, they're like restaurants. You know, they'll have a little bistro and they'll have the regular formal dining room where you can have a nice sit-down ordered dinner. And, you know, to your point, they have swimming pools and movie theaters. I mean, it's wonderful because you don't really have to go anywhere. Everything's, you know, kind of taken care of, you know, for you right there. And those are some really nice options to have.
Yeah, it's a great opportunity. And like you said, a lot of people don't realize what's out there. Whenever, you know, we started looking at places to do presentations or places are calling us to do presentations, it's like, wow, this is really nice. I'd like to live here. So
absolutely.
Kim and I are like, where do we, do you have a room available? Can we just like book it now? And it's interesting because I use you as an example because you were talking about your house that even though you're young and you're looking at your house and you're saying, hey, this is the house I'm always going to live in. I'm going to age in place in this house. So what do you really need to start looking for if you want to age in place in your house?
Right. I mean, one of the, you know, and I use my house as an example all the time because we live in a 100-year-old farmhouse and everything is upstairs. You know, our bedrooms are upstairs, our bathroom is upstairs, and then our laundry is downstairs in the basement. So, you know, we've got the worst possible design to age in place. And, you know, even the stairs leading up to get into our house are, I mean, it's beautiful. They're natural stone steps, but they're brutal in the wintertime. They freeze, and the number of times we've all fallen, you know, my husband, myself, and our daughter, I can only imagine what it's going to be like as we get older. So those are conversations we're having right now. And, you know, what are alternative ways to make our house age friendly? Because in its current state, it isn't. So, and these are all things that I would like to think about now so that in, you know, 25, 30 years, I'm not having to deal with that in a crisis or, you know, our daughter, who will be the one needing to make decisions for us, isn't having to deal with those decisions. Because it's challenging when family members don't really know what to do. And I mean, there are lots of things that we can make the plans creative. Fortunately, our day programs are starting to open up. So for a lot of folks that may not have an accessible bathroom downstairs, utilizing a day program, a medical model day program, is a wonderful idea because they provide personal care and medical services. So, you know, if somebody has a wound or perhaps they have some medical condition that requires, you know, feeding tube or diabetic management with insulin and injections, we can utilize the day program for that. So there, again, there are different plans that we can put in place. We just need the ability to have the time to plan for them because sometimes that's the biggest challenge is all of this takes time for sure.
It does. And if you want to be our next caller, give us a call at 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. It's funny, when you're talking about your house, I have the same problem. My bedrooms are either upstairs or downstairs. The laundry's downstairs. And I only have a half bath on the first floor. So, you know, that may not be my forever home either, you know?
Right. when you start looking at it, yeah.
You know, and that's the thing. It's like whenever you're looking at a house and you're shopping for a home, sometimes you don't think about, like, where am I going to be in 10 years? You know, what kind of situation am I going to be facing? And it's one of those things where you really should plan ahead. If you want to plan on aging in place, which we, you know, we kind of talk about people wanting to age in place. People don't want to have to be in their 80s and have to move, or God forbid their 90s and have to move. Is your house going to be appropriate? Is there something we can do to make it easier? I have a friend who actually has a first floor bedroom, a first floor bathroom. Everything is fine, but she doesn't like that bedroom or bathroom. And I'm like, you're going to have to use it if something happens. And she's like, but my laundry's downstairs. I'm like, we can put a washer and dryer in your kitchen. You know, it's like, mm-hmm. these things can all change and you just need some creative thinking to do it. But you need to make sure when you're thinking about these things, not only about your space, but about your documents too. Like I said, if you haven't dusted them off in 5 years, you should really think about it. You should look at them and make sure that they say what they want to say. And if your children of adults that, you know, are aging, if you haven't talked to mom and dad about it, or you haven't asked them, you know, what do your documents look like, or is everything in place, you really should start talking to your parents. Because if you don't know, then if something happens, a crisis, then they may not even be able to tell you where the documents are. My son asked me the other day, he goes, your healthcare proxy? I'm like, you're not it. He goes, thank God. So.
Well, and that's true, because you want to make sure that you name somebody that's actually going to follow through on the decisions that you want. I mean, that's super important. I tell people quite often that when we were doing our documents and I'm talking about all of the things that I did or did not want in the event of, you know, something catastrophic, my husband got very queasy. And when I asked him if he was okay, he's like, I don't think I can do this. And I said, you can't do what? And, he said, I'm not sure that I could be the one to make the decision to follow through on what your wishes are. And I said, well, then you cannot be my healthcare proxy.
Right.
So, but that was sort of an eye-opening moment for me, because I, you know, expected that he would be my person for that. And, I mean, it's okay. I have great healthcare proxies, but, it was only through having that conversation that I sort of learned that, okay, and that's good, because it's, you need to know what people's limitations are. That's so super important. And, you know, the other thing that's nice too, is as you get older, there are different documents too that you can put in place with your physician. We talk to folks a lot about the MOLST form, which stands for Medical Orders for Life-Sustaining Treatment. And that is done with your physician. And that's a wonderful form to put out, particularly as we age and our chronic conditions start becoming more labor-intensive as far as treatment goes, because that's a form that follows you no matter where you go. So when you fill it out with your physician, it goes on your electronic medical record, and it's very, apparent as to what your wishes are. And it's very specific as to, do you do antibiotic treatments for a short period of time? And if there's really no change, just continue. Do you even want to start antibiotics? There talks about maybe getting some level of IV hydration therapy if needed, or nothing at all. So when a physician signs it, it actually becomes a medical order. It's a physician order. So there, it eliminates a lot of the guesswork for folks sometimes. So a MOLST is something also that we additionally talk to folks about adding to their advanced directive portfolio as you get older, and again as our chronic conditions become more challenging to work with. So there are lots of tools that are out there.
Debbie, Kim,
right, and
we have
yes.
We have another caller. We have Bonnie from Schenectady.
Good morning, Bonnie.
Hi there. Quick question. My mom is in a nursing home, and my dad emergently. You were just talking about acute things happening. He actually had a medical event and currently is in rehab. And it's looking like it's going to transition into long-term care. We were in the process of literally starting paperwork for him as far as transfer of deed and such, but it doesn't look like that is going to happen. So we as children to assume that the house is going to have to be sold to pay for the nursing home at this point? It just happens so quick.
Yeah, it does. It does. And you're not the first. So basically, mom is in a nursing home. Is she on Medicaid?
She is.
Okay. So all the stuff that is exempt now because dad may end up in a nursing home is the stuff that's kind of on the table, right, that you're concerned about.
Right. Yep.
So there are options depending on what assets they have other than the house. Is the house really the only asset that they have?
Pretty much,
do they have some cash?
They were very simple living folks and didn't have a whole lot.
Yeah, so what you can do is if he would otherwise qualify, so like if he's down to the $15,900, you know, and stuff like that, we'd have to look at it. But what you can do is what's called an intent to return. It's a document that says, kind of paraphrasing, I know I'm in a nursing home, but I swear I'm going home, right? Mm-hmm. And then if you do that, and there's no other assets, they still qualify under the 15-9 and the five-year look-back and everything, then he'll qualify for Medicaid with the intent to return. And then what they do is they lien the house. So if he ended up, if he and mom, you know, ended up passing away before all the equity was gone in the house, then they passed away and you'd sell the house and then you guys would get the money above what they had paid for their care. Sometimes what people have done is they can't keep the house, right? Even though they've done the intent to return, they sell the house. It actually kicks the person off Medicaid for a bit, but they can usually save about half the proceeds. So it's really not, all is not lost, because Department of Social Services isn't just going to walk up to you and say, okay, sell the house. You could do the intent to return, and then that kind of kicks the can down the road just a little bit to give you some breathing room to figure out what you're going to do.
So if one of my siblings, for example, was interested in the house, is there any way to incorporate that in this? Or
well, I guess the next question was, were mom and dad living alone, or were any of your siblings living with them?
Not at this point. We were just getting to that point where we were applying for community Medicaid for dad, and with the possibility of potentially one of my siblings moving in there to help assist, but we hadn't gotten to that point yet.
Yeah, so, and none of all these questions I'm asking you are things like that we would ask if you came in. So you don't have the caregiver child exemption. Are any of your siblings disabled?
No.
Mm-mm. Okay, because that's another exemption, too. There are exemptions. You know, if someone is trying to preserve a house and trying to save assets, if a person's going into the nursing home, what I would suggest is, call on Monday, make an appointment to come in with all the information and sit down with one of the attorneys and see if you have any options, or we can actually tell you kind of what your options are at this point moving forward so that you at least know what you can do. You could give us a call at the office. The phone number for the office is 518-465-7581. And Stacy is the one that would have access to all the attorney's calendar. She's at extension 126. And she could see who has time to meet with you. And like I said, you know, all is not lost. We'll give you some options as to what you can do.
Very good. Thank you, ladies. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. Have a great weekend.
You too. Thank you.
So just like independent things happen.
Well, they do. And like you and I were talking about yesterday, I think the realization, a lot of times nursing homes will say, oh, they require, 24-hour supervision. They have to stay in the nursing home. And that's not always necessarily true, right? Like we're putting plans in place for someone right now who is bedbound, has a Hoyer lift, really can't do anything on her own, but we are applying for community-based services for her because, in addition to the care at home to give the husband a bit of a break, she'll get transportation, right? And that's not something we talk about a lot, or all the other services that come with community Medicaid. I mean, you know, he was talking about using the Hoyer lift to try to get her in the car. And that was just amazing to me that he was even considering that. I'm like, oh, no. Like, well, once you have Medicaid, you know, an ambulette will come and, you know, they provide wheelchair ambulettes, stretcher ambulettes. If somebody really can't even get out of bed, there are lots of options and lots of ways to access different types of services that will really provide that support that folks need, you know, depending on what program you're on under community Medicaid, there can be modifications made to the home. So, you know, if somebody needs a ramp, or we've had a lift put in the home before, you know, doorways widened, a bathroom added to the first floor so that, you know, the home is accessible. There are lots of options under these programs. So it's not just care that can be accessed or utilized when we talk about community Medicaid. It's all of the services that are needed to help support someone to stay in the community. And that's a really important thing for people to understand. And, you know, while nursing home, and I don't want to make it out that nursing homes are bad, but while they have somebody there 24 hours a day, you know, having somebody at home in their own environment that they're familiar with their familiar surroundings and things is super important to consider as part of a plan for somebody.
Okay, well, everybody have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you next weekend.
Thank you for listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. For more information on their services, please visit herzoglaw.com. If you'd like to speak with one of their attorneys, please contact the Albany office at 518-465-7581, the Saratoga office at 518-581-8131, or their Kingston office at 845-338-6405.